Open the bracket. It's time for All Squared.
Welcome to number 4 of All Squared. This time we're talking to comedian Matt Parker about just interesting things in general, really. Matt was in his fortified back garden bunker while we were talking to him, so the sound quality is a bit poor. We can only apologise for that.
So we're talking to Matt Parker, internet mathematics person and general talker about maths. He's all over that Twitter. Hello, Matt.
Hey, guys.
Today we're talking about kind of interesting, I'm going to put that in finger quotes in case you can't see me, the kind of date coincidences, time coincidences and so on. This is inspired by the fact that we're currently experiencing a whole week of days in which all the digits of the date are different, provided you ignore the digit zero. If you don't put leading zeros on the day and month, the release date of this podcast will be the 9th of April 2013, which is 942013. They're all different. And this has been going on for like 6 days now. So since the 5th of April? So it's been going on for like 4 days now. And we've had that kind of spate of days, but that hadn't actually happened before that since the 30th of June 1987, which is ages ago. It's like 826 years ago, right? This is a reference to the common internet fact that if you have a date coincidence like this, it won't happen again for 826 years. Although I should point out that this will happen again on the 4th of May, so it's not even that exciting. In fact, it's to do with the fact that this year has all distinct digits. So there are in fact going to be something like 30 days this year where it happens.
Yeah, I made the mistake ages ago of pointing out some of these 826 year things on Facebook. Because people will come up with other things and go, oh, wow, you wouldn't believe it. This month has got 5 Fridays and 5 Saturdays and 5 Sundays. And then people claim it won't happen for 826 years. Once or twice I mentioned this, and now every single thing I ever mention about genuine date facts and the like on Twitter or anywhere on the internet, people feel the need, often several of them, to point out that it won't happen for another 826 years. Christian being one such person, I should mention.
Well, I think Katie just involved herself in that as well.
Yeah, pretty much did. I mean, it sort of annoys me very much when this happens, because a lot of them are quite easily verified that they will happen sooner than 826 years from now. Like, it's just ridiculous to state that. And you worry that people are just kind of repeating this stuff or retweeting this stuff, as the kids are saying these days, without even checking that it's true.
I remember the first one I saw was 2010. I remember it was the summer 2010. I saw one of these things, and it had moved. It had somehow jumped from the Facebook population to infect Twitter. And I was like, well, guys, seriously, there's another month coming up very soon that has the same required Friday, Saturday, Sundays. And I thought, I was like, that's it. I'm done. I've debunked that one. We can all move on. But it's tenacious. So, I mean, at least once a year since, if not more frequently, I've seen it pop up in different forms. It's a bit like the flu virus. It keeps evolving and changing slightly. And whenever it does mutate, it seems all the previous debunking is no longer any kind of safety. And I'm now just curious. I'm tempted to see how many times this once every 826-year thing can reappear.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, people are kind of interested in weird coincidences. And, like, as much as it's all a bit sort of stamp collecting-y, people will go, oh, wow, it's like 10, 11, 12 today or whatever. You know, if there's some kind of like 12th of December 2012, everyone was like, oh my God, it's important somehow, and it's not. But, you know, it's the kind of thing people like to remark on, I guess. I don't know if that's why it kind of pops up a lot.
Yeah, because the two directions this goes, I mean, what bugs me is when something like this happens and it's wrong. So when it's factually inaccurate, I'm always very tempted to point out, look, I mean, it's amazing, I like looking at numbers, but you happen to be wrong on this occasion. It's very difficult to do that without being a real jerk. And so it's a difficult balance. I want to encourage people to look at these ridiculous number things. And when they are real, I think it's fantastic. They may be trivial. So, I mean, I remember, I did an interview. I think it was the Daily Mail on the 10th of the 10th, 2010. Mm. And they got very, very excited about it. And I wrote up a wonderful thing about how it's lovely to look for patterns. And we like looking for patterns and hooray, math. And a little bit about confirmation bias, because you're ignoring the 20 at the beginning of 2010 in that case. But then later on, you'll put it back in again if it's still a different pattern. And unfortunately, they cut all of that out of the interview because they had to make room for the numerologist they also talk to. So I think it is great that people enjoy looking at these things, but as long as they're not putting too much emphasis onto the numerology aspect.
Yeah, I think confirmation bias is a lot of it. And I went through a horrible phase when I was driving a car, which, I mean, like, for the couple of years that I was driving a car, not, like, one time when I was driving a car, but, like, every time I looked at the speedo, it always seemed to have, like, a triple repeated digit. And I couldn't stop noticing triple repeated digits. And I don't know if it's because it draws your eye a bit more, because, like, the three numbers are there and they're the same, but I felt like every time I looked at the speedo, it was a triple digit on the end. And I kept mentioning this to people, and they were like, it's clearly confirmation bias. Like, there's no reason that would be the case. It's clearly confirmation bias. Like, you're just remembering the times that you looked and it was that. But it really started to get to me after a while. I was like, this is spooky.
Is it exactly 111 miles from your house to where you used to work?
Ooh, that's a good question. No, it's not.
Oh, well, that's my explanation out the window.
Yeah.
But we all enjoy that, right? I mean, I remember my car recently ticked over, and this is giving away how old my car is, ticked over 88,000 miles, 888. And I was just, wow. I mean, I wanted to be driving 88 miles an hour at the time, but obviously that's illegal, so I didn't. And you probably shouldn't be photographing the thing. Anyway, but the point is, we all enjoy, I mean, everyone enjoys the speedo ticking over. And I think that's like a little glimpse into that sudden emergence of a pattern or something that's lined up that mathematicians thrive on. And I think it's great that that's a common human trait. We all enjoy that. Just some of us tend to get a bit overexcited and get involved in maths proper.
I mean, Christian, you're, I guess, involved in maths proper, and you have a thing, right?
I have a disease that I'm reluctant to talk about because it's highly contagious.
This is a place for sharing.
Okay. We don't have enough listeners for this to be a public health issue. A few months ago, I started noticing interesting times, like 10:10 and 13:13, like whenever it repeats or whenever it's a palindrome, I started noticing them going, oh, that's nice. And then you always start noticing, you can't see one and not note it after that point. So eventually I started saying, well, I lose a point every time I see one of these things. But then that's just, I'm actually earning points then. So I ended up with a whiteboard with about 20 points on it. So that didn't cure me at all. And the whiteboard I used was in the office, so now everyone in my office does this.
Okay, so do you know if you look at the clock and it's not a special time?
Right, so this is where it gets worse. Now I've started looking for interesting facts about all the other times I see. Because once someone convinced me it was confirmation bias that I wasn't just seeing 10:10 all the time, that I see other times. Now, my brain seems to have decided that...
You're tracking this on a whiteboard?
I was tracking it on a whiteboard, and I think that's not good for my mental health. And I'm letting them pass.
It's a very big step.
It is a big step. It hasn't helped. So straight away, things like 12:34 is good, and 12:48 are good as well, arithmetic and geometric sequences, things like that. And it's now boiled down to there's one time in the day that I dread and I fear seeing, which is 12:46, because I cannot think of an interesting fact about 12:46.
It feels like you should have one.
It does, doesn't it? Like 12:36, 12 is 12 factors into 36, and 1 plus 2 plus 3 equals 6, and 6 is a perfect number, so 1, 2, and 3 are all factors of 6. So they're good. 12:48
nice.
Is a geometric sequence. That's nice.
12:48 is lovely. I look forward to that.
Yeah. So there are all these interesting numbers very close, but 12:46 isn't.
Yeah. It's like the even numbers and 1 sequence that there is. I feel like there should be something like that, because the prime numbers is like some odd numbers and 2. Maybe you could include 1 in some even numbers somehow, and that would give you a thing. I don't know. Is it like half of... Oh, no, it's not half of prime numbers, is it? Because they're not even.
So
anyway.
I put this on our survey site, which is half the reason I made the survey site to begin with. And people have tried to be charitable. They've tried really hard to find interesting things about it. And the best one I found is someone noticed that 1, 2, 4, 6 is 1 less than the first 4 prime numbers.
Oh, that's good.
It's all right, but...
Yeah.
Like the prime preceders.
Yeah.
Prime that's a thing, yeah.
Not bad. Pretty good.
I feel like I should add that recently, on 2 separate occasions, I've been giving a talk about maths, and I've looked at the clock, and it's been pi. It's been like
actually,
3.
Actually, I'm tracking the clock right now, because it's 2:03 on my clock, yeah. I was thinking, yeah, guys, haven't noticed. I'm just going to wait. And then suddenly, whoever's talking at 3:14, I'm going to shout, pie! And I'll look like a hero. But thank you for reminding that, Katie. That's lovely.
Oh, sorry about that. We can just let people know what time to start listening to the podcast so that they can appreciate that in real time.
Whenever you're listening to this, wherever you are, pause it now. Just stop listening and resume at 3:03, and the rest of it will line up perfectly.
Excellent. Superb. Yeah, right. No, like literally, I was in a maths talk and I spotted that it was pi o'clock and I just started laughing and everyone was looking at me like, what? And I was like, I'm sorry, I've just noticed that it's pi o'clock. It's literally 3:14 and 15 seconds. And they all just burst out laughing. And I think I had them from that point on. They were like, they realise who I am now.
Well, we're coming up on Super Pi Day in 2015. Which
oh,
is
God,
be
yeah.
Very exciting. And people yeah. are already starting there. There are murmurs in the people who celebrate weird dates community. I'm sure there are some other wonderful dates between now and then, but Super Pi Day on the 14th of March 2015, that is going to go off.
Yeah, I mean, for any regular podcast listeners, if you can't be bothered to wait for Pancake Valentine's Day, which is in like 2040, yeah, that's the next big one, isn't it, I guess?
Actually, I did mourn the passing of 2011. Because for a while there, we had these fantastic binary days.
Oh, God, yeah.
Love the binary days. Oh, actually, Christian, you mentioned 10 past 10 a second ago. That's one of my favorite times. And I like it because 10:10 is binary 10. It's just got 10 all over. And for a decent run, we had 2010 to 2011, all these wonderful binary dates, and now no more. So it is sort of Super Fun Day, which keeps me going.
So we've talked about the... we've classed these things as, I've called it a mental illness, you've called it something that you keep noticing, or confirmation bias. It's weird stuff that we notice. But I think we said at the start that this spotting of patterns and keeping track of interesting facts about things is really useful in research maths. So the best example, I think, of that is the Online Encyclopedia of Integer Sequences, which was started by Neil Sloan when he realized that he was, in the course of his work, finding these integer sequences and thinking, oh, I wonder if that's got any links to anything. Do I need to discover facts about this myself, or has it already been done? So he's spent the rest of his life collecting these integer sequences.
It's an excellent website, I have to say. Oh, it's just so good. Like, when I learned about that website, it was like halfway through my undergrad, I realised that was a website that existed. I was like, this is amazing! Oh, it's so much fun as well. Like, if you could just pick any sequence of numbers and type them in, and it'll tell you if it's the start of a sequence, like if they share a property. You should have done that with 1, 2, 4, 6, Christian. Is that in there?
I feel I have done. I can't remember what it is right now. Matt, do you have any favourite integer sequences?
Oh, wow. Wow, that's, I mean, there are so many to choose from. And personally, I think that Fibonacci is a bit overrated.
Correct.
However,
I
think there are some very nice related ones to Fibonacci. So there's a great sequence of numbers, which are all the numbers which are square numbers and triangle numbers. So, for example, 36. So 36 is the sixth square number. And one day you'll get up to that podcast. And 36 is all the eighth triangle number. And the next one after that, I mean, it's a good chance to try and find it. And once you get the sequence of these triangle square numbers, they have a very Fibonacci-esque feel to them, except instead of just adding the two previous ones, there's a little bit of multiplying as well as adding to get the next term in sequences. And they have a different ratio that they approach, which is absolutely lovely. So that might, the triangle square numbers, that's a great sequence.
I just thought of a better name for them, by the way, because strictly speaking, they're also all round numbers because they're integers, right? So they're square and triangular and round. And there's an object that is, depending on which side you look at it from, like a triangle and a square and a circle. And is it Gombok? I can't remember what it's called. I think it's called a Gombok, and I reckon you should call
the
it a
Gombok
number.
Is Gombok's the one where no matter which way you put it down, it will rotate to the same point? It's only got one stable equilibrium. But I know the one that you're thinking of, and you're right. I mean, it would be a perfect thing for these types of numbers with the one. A tiny flaw that we can't remember its name.
Yes, so that's what they're called.
We can't remember.
I mean, we're on the internet, we could just look it up.
I did a nerdy thing. There's an art gallery in Newcastle that I sometimes go to because they're to look at the art, and they have a very nice cafe there. And I was sitting down once with someone in the cafe, and I looked across at a shelf, and some sculptor had made that shape that's it's round or a square or a triangle. And I don't know, it might have been a Gombok as well. It was one of these mono-mono singular shapes, mono-mono stable shapes or something like that. And I pointed it out in the middle of lunch, and I don't think that was encouraged in the arty-farty environment I was in.
I can't find its name at all. I found a Google SketchUp that someone's made of it, but they don't say what it's called.
Maybe it needs a name.
It was on QI once, right?
No, the Gombok was on QI.
I'm sure this was on QI as well.
Maybe.
Everything's been on QI.
Yeah. We will get to that point. When they reach the end of Series Z, they'll have talked about everything. And Steve will probably be like, what do I do now?
Back to the OEIS. A couple of the students at Newcastle have made it their quest on their idle days when they're Well, the applied mathematicians have computations running and the pure mathematicians don't do work anyway. They've, when they have some free time, they try and find new sequences that aren't already in the Encyclopedia of Integer Sequences.
Like and a Sloan whack.
Yeah. Did you just say
yes.
a Sloan Google whack?
That yeah.
We realised it's like Google whacking for mathematicians.
That is, it's, I hesitate to say it, but it's a nerdier form of Google whack.
Yes. And
if that's possible.
One of them got told off for submitting one that was so contrived. They said, this is clearly found by, I can't remember the word he used. Neil Sloan himself rejected it.
Wow.
Oh, wow. I tried to find variations on a Google whack, which no one else has ever tried to do before, which is a Google whack whack.
Like a meta trying, Google whack.
Yeah, trying to find Google whack variations people have never done before. Okay, it's a contrived joke I was just building up to. I just wanted to say whack whack, because in my head I thought that's going to be fun to say, and it turns out I was right.
It turns out if you Google circle, square, triangle, you get lots of PlayStation cheat codes. but you also get a lot of people who haven't yet named this object. So, you know, we're going to have to hold some kind of competition to name the circle, square, triangle thing.
If we hold a competition, I think the usual aperiodical prize of an artisanal handmade integer is to be offered.
Okay, that's on.
So your suggestion,
try
please.
Square.
Yeah. So, oh, yeah, some kind of weird portmanteau of the words.
Yeah.
Okay.
Can we, while we're complaining about QI, and in my head we still are, I know technically the conversation has moved on, I was going to tweet about the fact that 2013 would have all these wonderful distinct digit dates. And I was like, that is a nice thing about 2013. I'll save that little chestnut up until, I mean, around New Year would be a good time to do it. But the QI elves shot the mathematical load on the 12th of December. And so they substantially beat me to the post on that.
So were they trying to double up on what was already a good numerical date on the 12th, 12th, 12th? They decided to to go for
it. Yeah, I know. As if the 12th of the 12th of the 12th didn't have enough going on.
I mean, the thing that winds me up about this is when you've got people repeating stuff that's wrong, like as someone who works in kind of maths outreach, I feel like, as you say, correcting them always just makes you feel like you're being harsh. But then if you let them carry on talking about this stuff, like, what can we do? You know, because this will happen and we can't stop it.
Maybe we need, like, some replacement good things to send them.
Mm.
And be like, oh, wow, that's I'm glad you're excited, but you're totally wrong. Hey, have you seen this thing over here? And then the old bait and switch.
Like a retort that blows their minds even more thoroughly and is correct.
Yes, we just need to be significantly cleverer than we currently are. The one that really wound me up was the one with, like, there was like an equation that you had to decide what it equals, and depending on what you take as the order of the operators, it gives you a different answer. And it was like, oh, wow, this is mental. You know, like, everyone who's a mathematician was like, well, no, because there's a preference order. like, there is an ordering on that already that's established. And that means the answer is this. But then apparently, like, if you give it to classrooms of kids, they'll pick each, you know, they'll split half and half or whatever.
Yeah, I forget the exact one that broke first. But I think the thing is, what it kind of hinged on was there was a divide symbol in there, the classic line with a couple of dots going on. And that symbol is delightfully ambiguous a lot of the time. And that's why, I guess, if you're doing any maths beyond secondary school, you stop using that little divide thing and you just go for the fractional kind of thing.
A solidus is the line.
Yeah.
Is it an opulus is the divide symbol with two dots?
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
You are. So we stop using the word Christian just said, because, I mean, it does lead to these problems. But what really kind of bugs me about that argument with the order of operation is that that's what most people remember from school, that maths was about memorizing an algorithm that you then used to just solve problems blindly over and over without any room for interpretation in what you're doing. And you could see people's outrage at the notion that there were different ways people could interpret this one mathematical statement, whereas for them, they memorized the correct BODMAS or PEDMAS or BIMDAS or whichever system people have learned, and there's only one way to do it, and maths is about just doing it the way you learned and no other way. And so I think that there's a nice insight into the way most people perceive mathematics as something to be rote, learned, and memorized, and it's black or white. You're correct or you're not, and you're getting it wrong because this is the way my teacher taught me. And that, for me, was more of a shame.
So I found a link. There's a guy who's found two different actual Casio calculators. So they're both made by Casio, And if you type in a particular one, it gives you two different answers. So the one he's got is 6 divided by 2 brackets 1 plus 2. And I guess there's an implied multiplication symbol in there that doesn't get written down, but different calculators apparently give different answers. And apparently the iPhone built-in calculator gives a different answer again, which is like not even sensible.
So the two sensible answers are 1 and 9, because you could either do the division first and then multiply by 3, or you could multiply 3 by 2 and divide that into 6, which gives you 1. So these are either 1 or 9. But the iPhone gives 2.
Yeah, we'll put a link to this page in the...
Typical app, trying to please everyone.
Think different.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Which would I go for out of these two answers? I think I'd multiply first. So it's 6, divide symbol, 2, open bracket, 1 plus 2, close bracket. I feel like I would go for 1, because I would just do the multiplication first.
I'd go for 1 as well.
Yeah, I'd go for 1.
Well, the Casio FX570MS favours 1, whereas the Casio...
What do you calculate for me? Pi clock is 14 past 3.
Yay! Yeah, the Casio FX50FH, which, as far as I can see, looks like a less advanced calculator. It has fewer functions. Gives you 9, so I don't know.
Oh, well, there you go. Case closed. We've done it.
Yeah.
We should let everyone know we've solved that one now. We can all move on.
It keeps coming back on Twitter, that one as well. You keep seeing people sending variants of it.
Have you seen the one that isn't even ambiguous?
That would be brilliant.
There's one that just relies on operator precedence between plus and multiply. And it's like a Facebook poll, what does this equal? And normally I don't get angry about these things. I don't get angry like you do, Katie. I just let these things wash over me. But I got angry about this
one. After you've written down the word, then they can wash over you.
Well, I mean the things where people are wrong on the internet. I don't get angry about that. I get agitated about interesting things. Anyway, I got angry about this one because I saw that my cousin had got it wrong.
Oh.
And then you have the dilemma. Do you correct her or just let it slide?
Because, this is some aspect in which correcting someone on the internet makes you a jerk. But then also you don't want them to go through life thinking that it's probably not important enough. You know, it's not like they're going through life thinking something that is genuinely going to impact on their...
Yeah, I think she's old enough now that either I can't teach her the right way or it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
That might be a defeatist attitude, but I think if she was younger, I'd spend more time explaining the joy of maths.
I think the part of the reason why I get angry is I have unreasonable standards for people anyway, and I believe that everyone should enjoy maths and no one should ever claim that maths is difficult. So that's probably unreasonable, because I know that it is. But I feel like people, you know, smack-talking maths cuts me deeply. So that's why I get so annoyed by this stuff, and I know I probably shouldn't.
I think the golden rule that I've discovered is that you cannot correct someone on the internet without coming off as a jerk. So I think in terms of generic mass PR, I've always gone for the, hey, I'm glad you're looking at these things, here's another one, and then try and wean them onto ones which have some genuine interest and preferably are actually correct, because I think that's the best good you're going to do, is to capture the enthusiasm, ignore the inaccuracy, and try and push them in the right direction.
What do you think of there's like the chocolate maths thing that's like the really nice arithmetic sort of deception?
Yeah, I'm happy with that because it's something, for some reason, for it to go viral on the internet, it's attached to chocolate. And, I mean, I've seen it done various ways, but the common one is think of how many times you'd like to have chocolate in a week. And that's a mechanism for getting people to think of a number without saying, think of a number. And it's also good because it provides upper and lower bounds on that they pick. But then there's no other link to chocolate. Or they have other things. Think of how many times you want to do such and such activity within a certain time frame and you get the number.
Yeah, like algebra.
Well, exactly. Yeah, so it'd be higher or lower for some people. And then you go through and you do what is a quite straightforward, often quite lovely number trick, but the whole thing's based on chocolate or whatever the activity is, which I think is a bit of a shame. And I know a lot of people get annoyed because they come across as either quite trivial or people aren't appreciating the mass behind them. But I think as mass communicators, there's a lot to be learned from these things, as well as the ridiculous divide, six divide, multiply, malarkey. Because it works. I mean, the ambiguous 6 dividing thing has been certainly tweeted around Twitter a lot more than anything I've ever written. And I've had like radio stations, like the announcers are getting in touch to try and get someone to talk about it. And while we may be quite dismissive of these things, they work because these are the things which gets passed around and everyone gets talking about them, whether or not they're like maths. So I think, well, my first gut reaction is to be dismissive of this stuff. I think there's a lot we can learn about where these things accidentally become very popular, and if we can try and use that for our own evil intentions.
Hmm. Yeah, the chocolate calculator thing reminds me very much of there's like a really old, I'll pick a number and then do some operations on it that clearly undo themselves. And then you always end up thinking of the number 5, but then it usually ends up being, think of an animal that begins with that number and then think of a country that begins with the letter before. You know, like you always end up with an elephant from Denmark. Yeah. And they're like, several times, like as a mass communicator, people have come up to me and said, oh, do you want to hear a trick I can do? And then they do that. And I always go along with it and say, oh, yeah, that's really good. And it's just nice because then, you know, they know it's a number puzzle and they think it's impressive and want to show people, which is nice, even though I find it tedious.
And you always think of an eel in the Democratic.
Yeah. Yeah.
So this kind of thinking about where maths is ambiguous or... I suppose even tricks you can do with maths, that's really what maths is, isn't it? Because there used to be the debate about whether imaginary numbers really should exist or should be used, which is why they're called imaginary numbers. And eventually people had huge arguments about that, saying, no, it doesn't make sense, you can't have that number. But now we just accept it as a part of maths.
They used to not accept irrational numbers, right? Yeah. A long time ago.
And even these days, there's, do you accept the axiom of choice? What sets of axioms do you use? And so mathematicians aren't above these kinds of pointless debates about what's correct based on completely arbitrary axioms. And I suppose that's really what doing maths is deciding what rules you want to use and seeing what happens.
That's the true mathematician's answer is, well, if you assume you do this operation first, you get this. But if you do this, you get that. And these are the two wonderful outcomes depending on what axioms you've started with.
Yeah, it's kind of being a mathematician is the ability to explain that you might get two different answers. You know, you can always imagine a mathematician swooping in and explaining that there are two possibilities here. Whereas if you've got someone who just insists that it's one, yeah, that's kind of a slightly naive interpretation of it.
Is it Ben Goldacre has this thing where he wants T-shirt made up where it says, I think you'll find it's a bit more complicated than that. So we can stand next to people with a very clear-cut slogan on their shirt. We should have the mathematician equivalent with shirts where it says, I think you'll find it depends on which axioms you're accepting.
Yeah.
We should have like a cautionary post, like a workplace safety post that said, I accepted the axiom of choice, and just so someone saw their work falling apart.
Should say, while you're at work, please do not accept the axiom of choice.
And wash your hands.
Yes, always, no matter what job you do. Yeah, so this thing about accepting the axiom of choice or not, or picking particular sets of axioms, is why I'm not a Platonist. Because Platonists believe that maths exists in somewhere, on some higher level, that we can't see, and we're just discovering it. But it's all arbitrary. We get to make up what the rules are, and then we, from those rules, work out what happens.
To some extent, I guess, yeah. But
whereas I'm with Plato all the way.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure either way, because, like, to some extent, there is a lot of stuff that just falls out and just happens. And that, to me, is too good for it not to just be... like an existing set of stuff. But you are right. That's just confirmation bias, though.
Like, back to the times. You could say, too convenient that there are so many palindromic times during the day. To which I say, 12:46.
Sounds like you're quoting a Bible verse.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I don't forget about the book of Mass Times, 12:46.
I've got to make that a thing now. So I think that's about all we've got time for. So thank you, Matt, very much for your company. Do you have anything you want to plug?
Oh, of course, I've always got things to plug. I'm doing some shows in London, so if people want to come along and see some nerdy maths and the like live on stage, I will be doing some live spreadsheets. Then we've got Festival of the Spoken Nerd. It's a show I do with some other guys with Helen Annie and Steve Mould, and that's on the 16th, 17th and 18th of April 2013, in case you're listening to this in the future. It's on the Bloomsbury Theatre. But if you go to festivalspokennerd.com, all the information's there. Oh, you had Steve on before. So Steve, if anyone remembers, he's my, he's a database guy, first and foremost, but he also does ridiculous math thing with me. And so we do the math gear website and stuff. So yeah, everyone, Better mask here. We've just updated the back end. It's brilliant.
Yes, we'll stick links to all of these things in the notes for the podcast. Okay, super. Thanks very much.
So a quick bit of bookkeeping now. A couple of numbers ago, we posed a puzzle to do with the numbering of pages, and so we better give a solution to that. So, Katie?
Yes, the puzzle was to do with numbering of pages, and if you had a go at doing the puzzle, you'll find that it's quite easy to make errors when doing this because you accidentally count too many pages, and that how many pages have one digit and how many pages have two digit, and if you manage to work all of that out correctly, you should get that the answer is 562 pages.
Great. So we're not going to do that bit anymore. We've decided it's not worth the bother.
And instead, we're going to talk about the Online Encyclopedia of Integer Sequences, which we mentioned during the podcast interview that you've just listened to, but we may have kind of glossed over a little bit about what it is and stuff about it. So we thought we'd do a little bit of jamming around about Sloan, which is what we referred to it as quite cryptically, and that will all be explained very shortly.
So the Online Encyclopedia of Integer Sequences is online at oeis.org, or in the Swedish spelling alphabet, that's Olof, Erik, Ivar, Sigurd, Punkt, Olof, Rudolf, Gustav.
Yes, it's basically exactly what you think it might be. It's an online encyclopedia of sequences of integers. So basically, anytime anyone in research discovers a sequence of integers, they can put it into this encyclopedia because it's online. You can submit entries to it. And it's just this massive collection. You can search it. You can either type in the first few terms of a sequence and it will try and find any sequences that match that beginning. Or you can type in a rough description of what you're looking for, like, you know, number of factors each number has or whatever. And then for each sequence, the nth entry in the sequence will be something, you know, to do with the number n. So it'd be like the nth prime number or, you know, more complicated things. But every entry has got a reference. It's all cross-referenced, so if it refers to any other sequences or if there are any other sequences that are relevant, you can get links to those as well. And it's really, really useful because if you're working in maths and you find some numbers in a sequence, you can go on there and check if someone else has already discovered this and see if there's anything related. It's called Sloan by many people because it was created and is maintained by, among other people, a mathematician called Neil Sloan. And you can, in fact, use it as a reference. If you're writing a paper, you can reference N.J.A. Sloan and Simon Plouffe, the Encyclopedia of Integer Sequences. And it's an actual legitimate reference that people use.
So it started out as a printed book because the first edition was printed in 1973, back before people were doing things on computers exclusively. I think the last printed edition was in 1996, and that came out in three formats, one of which paper, two of which floppy diskettes, either MS-DOS or Macintosh formatted. Those diskettes went for about $20, as far as I can tell. But now it's all online. The last published edition only had 5,000 sequences in. It currently has, I think, over 200,000, maybe a quarter of a million. So we've picked out some of our favourite sequences as a taster for the encyclopedia.
So my favourite one at the moment is sequence A135650. We will put links to all of these in the show notes. But in fact, this is a sequence of even perfect numbers, but written in base 2. And if you haven't seen this already, go and look at it, because there is a really cool thing about how perfect numbers look when you write them in base 2. I'm not going to spoil it for you. I'm just going to let you look that up.
It's not often that a maths reference needs a spoiler warning. One of my favourite ones is sequence A002904. This is quite an early one. It's a John Conway original, but it's completely, completely pointless. It's if you say the number N in English, delete all letters except C, D, I, L, M, V, and X. Let's see if you can guess where this is going. Read it as a Roman numeral. If it's a valid Roman numeral, that's the nth number in the sequence. Otherwise, the nth number in the sequence is zero. It is gloriously pointless.
Yep. So you thought 2904 was quite an early one. The absolute best one in Sloan is sequence A000012. This is the 12th entry in Sloan. And it's described as the simplest sequence of positive numbers. And it is, in fact, the sequence consisting of just the number 1 in every entry. And it's fantastic because the definition of this sequence is given underneath in a whole bunch of different ways. Do you want to tell us some of them, Christian?
Yep. So first of all of the ones in a sequence is the number of ways of writing n as a product of primes. So each n can only be written as a product of primes in one way.
That's true.
It's the number of ways of writing n as a sum of distinct powers of 2. That's also true.
It's pretty good that that's true, because otherwise binary wouldn't work.
Yeah. Do they give a proof? I don't think they do. Yeah, so it's the continued fraction for the golden ratio. That's quite nice. That's why the golden ratio is such a nice number. It's an example of an infinite sequence of positive integers whose distinct pairwise concatenations are all primes. To all 11.
That's superb.
Yeah, that one's pushing it a bit. It's a sequence for which the nth entry for every n is both square-free and a perfect square.
Yep.
It's, what is it? It's also the smallest divisor of n. It's the decimal expansion of 1 over 9.
Yep.
It's the number of complete graphs on n nodes. And for all non-zero n, it's n to the power of 0. So if you wrote that as a sequence, that would be this one. It's the differences between each n.
Yeah.
And it's the number of maximal self-avoiding walks from the northwest to southwest corners of a 2x n grid.
Yeah, if you kind of take each word in that statement and think about what that means, you can work out what that might look like. But it was northwest to southwest. That's a superb definition.
Yeah, it's quite obtuse, isn't it? So I think we'll stop there with those. There are lots of useless sequences on the encyclopedia as well as useful ones. You can spend a long time looking them up. So next time on All Squared, we'll be talking about our favourite books.
And now it's time to close the bracket, and that's All Squared.